This is the Working Drummer Podcast, featuring conversations with ground-level pros from all styles and regions. Real drummers with real stories about making a living in music.
Hey everyone, this is Matthew Krause, and you are listening to the podcast Working Drummer. Today, my guest is drummer Matt Muckle. Matt is a Pittsburgh-based drummer who has worked with and toured with acts such as Paul Gilbert, Lynch Mob, Buck Cherry, John Waite, and many others. He's currently recording with and preparing to tour with the band Kingdom Come. This legendary rock band formed in the late 80s, and with Matt as their new drummer, continues to entertain their committed and strong fan base. If you're interested in showing your support for this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/workingdrummer. We have tons of bonus content from former guests. We've got a new video series that Zach and I are doing for 2024. And most recently, our friend Matt Iceman, who was just recently on the show, does an amazing job breaking down some things that he learned from hanging out with the amazing Shannon Forrest. And Matt just does such a great job breaking down these exercises and showing you how they're done, how they're applied, and the production is just amazing. So for just $1 starting, you can access all this material. We have listeners supporting us for $5, $10, $25. This all goes towards supporting the show and supporting what we do here at Working Drummer Podcast. At the beginning of this interview, you'll hear us talking about a mutual friend of ours. When I moved to Nashville back in 2000, I met a good friend of mine, Dutch Noss. And Dutch is from Pittsburgh and knew Matt. And Matt goes into how they connected. And the story I didn't know is why Matt plays drums. And Dutch is a big part of that. I just love this story. Dutch is somebody that I've known for over 20 years. But I just love to know that he was such an inspiration to this young Matt Muckle. And Matt has been crushing it and has had an amazing career. And I hope you enjoy this conversation with Matt Muckle.
Without him, without Dutch, I wouldn't have been playing. I wouldn't be talking to you now. I mean, I would be probably coaching baseball for high school, not playing drums, you know? So
What led you to that?
Well, because he put me in my first real original rock band. He was a guitar player. And he was like kind of a real big deal in town when it came to the original rock scene. And I was 16 years old, and I don't know how old he is. He might be 10 years older than me. Okay. Maybe eight. So I was like, I play drums. He's like, Matt, just stick with baseball, man. You're going to like a really good high school. You're going to get into a great college. We're going to get you into school and you're going to play ball. You're going to get a good education. You know, I thought maybe I'd be a teacher or something. Yeah. You know, and I was like, no, man, I want to play rock and roll. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And so are we rolling right now?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Okay. So I come from a Led Zeppelin, Van Halen, Motley Crue, Kiss background, you know, and he was more like the alternative prog rock dude. There was like the alternative cool dude. And, I had an old cassette, that was, remember the band Warrant? Okay. So I had a Dirty Rotten Filthy Rich cassette with like Down Boys. So I took it. I had no tape, blank cassettes. So I took masking tape and put it over top of it. You should tape over tapes like that, you know, back in the day. And I taped myself, recorded myself playing drums and at my house. And I gave it to him. And so I said, check it out. He's like, yeah. So I made him listen to it after baseball practice one day. He's like, dude, this ain't you. I said, no, it's me. Like, I play drums. He's like, yeah, whatever, man. So then he's asking my buddies, all the kids on the team, Has Mucko really played drums like this? They're like, yeah, dude, he's been playing since he was like 2 years old. And he was, I got to come up and hang out. So he brings his amp to my house after baseball practice one day. And I think I just may have turned 17 years old, just may have turned 17. And he was like, dude, you want to go in the studio next week? Here's one of my new tracks. So he took me to the recording studio. And I was like, didn't even play in a rock band ever. I just practiced in my, you know, in my basement or, you know, at the time and by myself and put me in a recording studio like 2 weeks later or something like that. And we started working together and he put me in my first rock band and I never played in the cover band until I moved to LA. So I was, you know, it was pretty cool, man. So he got me my first alternative rock band. It was, you know, it was a alt rock band. I was 17 or 16 or whatever and started playing and rest is history, man. Without him, I wouldn't be really, you know, wouldn't have had done half the cool stuff I've done, you know.
That's great. I love that, man. And the, I guess, you know, I knew you guys had a connection, but I didn't know the details of the connection. Yeah. And, you know, again, there was a time that, you know, we were in a band together. Our kids hung out a lot together when they were little. There was a long time we didn't see each other. Now we're back together doing some work, doing some recording. And, you know, our kids are now in college and out and we're in the workforce, you know, living young adult lives. And it's been fun. You know, it's like we spend half the time in rehearsals just talking and catching up and cracking jokes. And so I love that story. And it always goes back to what inspires young people to get started. And everybody's story is unique. And I'm glad to know the person that inspired you to do what you do, because you're just you're killing it, man.
I'm very blessed. Yeah. And I've been very blessed to have been around great musicians and who have uplifted me and supported me and spoke good things into me. So I kept, you know, good energy. Good energy is everything. Because if you don't inspire people, or you're not being inspired, you just get depleted. And I was feeling that lately. Honestly, I went through some crazy stuff in the past year. Losing both of my parents in the same year. I was a caregiver and I moved back from Los Angeles 10 years ago to come do that. And it's just, you know, what you think, you know, you're used to a normal path. You're just every day I stopped touring. I became a dude who played local cover bands and taught drums and produced bands and write for them. So, but locally, basically I stepped out of like the Los Angeles thing and moved back to the East Coast. And I was starting to feel depleted and uninspired and burned out by some of the people around me that were just negative and just taking from me. Rather, I wasn't being filled back up. I'm filling their cup up and they're just drinking my cup. They're drinking from me and they're drinking their cup. So I had nothing pouring back into me. So luckily, God sent one of my biggest cheerleaders is Danny Stagg from the band Kingdom Come, which is one of my favorite rock bands of all time. Contacted me. I was out playing a show at a casino about 2 years back, and he said, "Listen, we're having some issues with our drummer James, and we'd like you to come start playing drums for us." And are you interested? I was like, "F yeah," and so we started working together. And there wasn't many shows being played, but they were keeping James, you know, up and running, trying to get him healthy. Because I don't know if you're familiar with James Kotak, but he was the drummer for Kingdom Come and the drummer for the Scorpions for 20 plus years and one of the best rock and roll drummers ever walked on stage. And he just passed away right after Christmas this past year. So, but I was back to this. Back to the story where Danny, the lead guitarist and founding members of Kingdom Come, and JB Frank, along with him, the bass player, is another founding member. They were priming me to be the new drummer for over like about 2 years now. And we started recording stuff together. And I just came from a recording session for the new Kingdom Come stuff to do this podcast for you today. So, and I'm really excited. I got to tell you, man, we played our first three shows last week in a row and we killed it. I couldn't be more proud than I am with these three, the three members in the band besides myself. The band hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't sounded this great since they started, you know, when they were all pretty much young and clean and sober, you know?
Yeah. I just want to let people know that, like, we had this interview, you made yourself available yesterday, and then the recording came up. We're going to try and do something this afternoon. We kept getting, you know, things pushed around because, I mean, again, when I have guests on here, you guys are making yourself available to us, and we can't thank you enough. But like these opportunities, this workflow, all this stuff comes first, and it gives us something more to talk about. It's like this new thing, recording with Kingdom Come. I know you guys have there's a newer singer that's a part of this group.
We hired him. Just within the past 2.5 months, man, like, and just brought him in, and he is slam dunking it. His name's Ezekiel Kaplan, and he is he's from Los Angeles. He's amazing. He sings like the original singer Lenny, who was to me one of the best rock and roll singers ever. And he sings like, you know, he reminds me of like Lenny Wolfe meets Tom Kiefer of Cinderella meets John Corabi off the Hooligans Holiday album from Motley Crue. And he also plays rhythm guitar as well. So, but you know, with Danny Stagg in the band, I mean, you know, it's not much. You don't need two guitar players. However, Rick, our rhythm guitarist, Rick had to cancel last minute for this past week, these last few shows. He had a family emergency to take care of. So basically, Kingdom Come is a new lead singer and new me, which I've been around back and forth for a while with them, and three original members. So we're doing much better than most of the bands from that era.
That's true. Well, I mean, and I know you're recording. What's the timeline for when these recordings will be made available, or do you know?
That's a good question. Well, me and Danny worked on these together, the lead guitarist and main songwriter with JB. These were done during COVID. We were writing and producing them recording and producing them like 2 years ago. So it's what you're, the good thing about this band is it's laser focused, and we know what we are. You know, we are a hard rock blues band. Okay. That just kind of basically, you know, those guys came out of that hair band era and just so happened to have big hair, but it really didn't sound like Motley Crue or sound like Poison. They sounded like Zeppelin and Whitesnake, you know? And, you know, and so a you know, blues rock bass band, a hard rock blues bass band. So we are sticking our guns and it sounds like old Led Zeppelin, man. Let's be honest. I mean, that's what we are, you know? And, you know, and no one said they never heard of Led Zeppelin, by the way. I want to clear this up. Some little punk that was on MTV, little reporter, came up to Danny during the Monsters of Rock tour, and he asked Danny from Kingdom Come, "Is it bother you that everyone compares you guys to Led Zeppelin?" And what Danny said was, "I never purchased a Led Zeppelin album." He never said that he'd never heard of Led Zeppelin. Okay, and we're all massive fans of Led Zeppelin. How could you not be? I mean, the best rock and roll band that walked the planet, them and the Beatles. Okay, so that's our base. We're playing hard rock and roll, blues rock and roll, and the stuff is powerful. We have a lead singer that comes out and rips the paint off the walls when he hits those high notes. Okay, and I hit like a freaking animal. Okay, so you know, and I got one of the best guitar players in the world on the side, and JB on bass, man, killing it, and we're having a blast. Rick's coming back, and yeah, man, we're going to make this better than ever. And we're all excited. We all get along great. We love each other. We're friends. We're like, we're kind of brothers, you know?
I love that you talked about just having positive energy and it filling your cup. Because a lot of times, and this is a quote that I heard from you, and I've heard it before, but you reminded me of it. The quote is, "Say yes until you can afford to say no."
Bang.
To every gig. And I think what happens, and this is kind of what I'm dealing with, and I'm gonna expose something here. I'm going through a situation right now where, you know, sometimes the beginning of the year for me is a little slow. Some opportunities come through and I'm like, yes, I'll do it. Yes, 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 whatever. And then I find myself maybe in a situation I'm not really super hip to, or it's sapping my energy, my spirit. And then you have to kind of slowly shed that and then focus on the things that don't always pay the best, but that feed your soul and keep you engaged, keep you creative, all these things, because that's what's sustaining. That's kind of how you want to live your life. So I'm kind of going through this moment right now where, man, the negative energy in this project is reached its zenith. And my closest friend and is the guitar player with me in this project. We are both working on drafting these emails and stuff like, we need to get the fuck out of this because it's just, it's not worth it. I'm too old. I've been doing this for too long to put up with negative shit, because I need that positive energy to then carry on to the rest of my day and life, to the people that I care about the most, so I can continue to create music.
You're exactly right. Listen, it's all about spirit and energy. What do you put out? What are you putting out there? So I have been guilty of being negative. I mean, I'll take full responsibility. It's because I was depleted and burned out, and I wasn't feeling good about what I was doing. And I decided to, with everyone in my life, friends, girlfriends, you know, whatever, family members, if you're not contributing good energy to me, you're out. Yeah. I have, and it's just healthy boundaries. It's not that I don't love you, not that I don't care about you, but you are burning me out. I can't do it. I need to be fulfilled. So that's why your spiritual life is important, and your spiritual walk, whatever you're doing with, especially for me, it's God, you know, and my walk with God is very important, because keeps me centered, keeps me calm. I want to be Godlike. I don't want to be short-tempered or heated, reply with heated comments, heated replies, you know. It doesn't inspire me. So I know if I start feeling someone is being heated with me, I just put the phone to say, I got to call you back. Or, hey, that's fine. Listen, let's sleep on this. I got to go. Or, and then eventually, if they keep continuing that way, I just have to, like, let them go.
Yeah.
It's just not good for me, because it brings stuff out in you that you don't know that you have this, that can possibly be negative, you know? And I can't focus on what I'm best at, is like writing songs, producing, and beating the shit out of the drums, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm trying to stay laser focused. And I got 3-4 of the guys in the bands that are trying to do the same thing. And I have to play other gigs. I have to do other things. I have to go. I have to teach, which I love to do, teach drums. And I still have to produce and write for people. Once a little bit. But my passion right now, I'm trying to stay focused on, you know, playing drums for Kingdom Come. And I just got a call to play drums for, we'll talk about that personally, because it's pretty cool. I can't really say it yet, but I gotta be careful. But
okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you. But so it's going to be a great supplemental thing from one of my favorite bands, from the 80s. So I'm pretty excited, early 90s. But yeah, so finding good people to be around. What's the quote? It's bad company corrupts good morals.
Mm.
And I can't have it around me. You know, and I refuse it. So, and that will bleed into every other aspect of life. I mean, speaking of Dutch, we had a really good conversation for 2 hours a few weeks ago, and to the point where I was like, wow, you know, you want to be around people that really care about you and want the best for you. You know, they're setting you up to win. You want to set them up to win. You know, the better my friends do, the happier I am. Because I want to do well, because that's just, it's contagious. The natural order of things is, you know, you reap what you sow, you know, you get back put into things, you know, you're planting bad seeds or you're planting good seeds, you know, good fruit comes out of, you know, good seeds, you know, planted. So you plant bad seeds, you know, bad stuff happens. So I want no parts of it. So I'm living a happier life. And my playing and my studio work definitely exemplifies that. You know what I mean?
I think that's the thing is when we're feeling everything else in the universe on top of us. It will affect you physically. It will manifest itself in negative ways in your performance. And to bring it back to this quote that I heard you say in another interview is, and this is how it relates to the working drummer, to those of us that are trying to make a living at playing music, is the quote is, say yes until you can afford to say no. And basically to tie all this up together is, like, we do find ourselves playing music we don't want to play. We do find ourselves in situations, maybe the gig, maybe the people that we don't want to be in, but we're trying our best to try and earn an income, grow our network. And so we do those things until you can afford to say no. And what that means is afford to then pick the things that work best for you. And you can't just say no to only, you can't say yes to only the things you want when you're starting out, or maybe when things are slow. Cause I'm, you know, I've been doing this professionally for almost 30 years. There are still times that I have to take gigs that I don't want to take. I don't have that luxury, you know, to do that, but I do have to keep tabs on what I'm saying yes to long-term.
It does. It'll start to wear on you. I'm in certain situations like that. Now, you know, there is a fine line though. You got to get that point where, like, you're like, you know that if I go and I take this gig, how much is that going to be an embarrassing situation? If I can make this $1,000 right now, where's it going to affect me in the long run later on down the road? That $1,000, is it really worth being embarrassed? You know, about something you did for money that you did, it's just not indicative of your level. Not you're putting anyone down, but you have a certain, you should set a certain bar and a level to where you want to be, perceived and looked at, and financially and, you know, physically, you know, so people see you and they know that they can't get you for a certain song and dance, you know, and,
well,
you know,
I'll tell you another thing. I think there's another aspect of that. It's sometimes what's under the hood that people don't see. It's behind the scenes, it's rehearsals, it's sound checks that just, like, are just not good. And maybe on the surface they seem great, but inside you're just struggling to relate. So I don't want to, you know, I think the points are made, and it's like it's really important that we take care of ourselves mentally.
Mental, it is. You know, meditating and, like, let yourself breathe, man. Everything around you is, like, it's moving fast. So, like, I know myself, man, I'm a fast talker. I'm a fast mover. Whenever someone has an idea or trying to figure something out in the studio or just even with Kingdom Come or whomever I'm producing or writing for, I'm looking, I'm going, I have 20 ideas. My ADHD is in there, and it's got every answer you, but I gotta let that person breathe. I don't want to step on a butterfly, even though sometimes you got to put the foot down and say, okay, that's it, I'm stepping in here, I gotta do this, you know. So that being, you know, without hurting someone's ego, and that's important because everyone has an ego, and it's how far you don't want to bruise anyone, and you know, and you don't want to over talk somebody, you know. And you know, make them feel reduced, blame me, you know, because it sucks. Dude, as drummers, we've all probably been reduced by singers and songwriters in the beginning when you didn't know how to write songs or know how to produce or how to record, you know. And I treat people how I want to be treated, you know what I mean?
In the studio, there's an interview I did with a great Canadian drummer, Chad Melchert. And I said, is there advice about studio work that you could give that's really helpful? And he goes, yes, a lot of us have a lot of experience in the studio, more so than the singer songwriter, you know, because we're recording for multiples. Think about it. If you're doing sessions for six different singer songwriters, they have 1/6 the experience in that 1 week than you do. So don't be condescending. If they say something that isn't isn't accurate in its terminology, you know, don't be condescending. Be a team player and welcome them into the process, because they're paying for that.
They're paying for it. And they don't know music theory, and they're going, I need this from you. I'm like, what it sounds like to me, what you're saying is, you want me to sound like I'm falling down the steps or three tennis shoes in the dryer for this drum fill. And I'm like, they don't know how to say, I need a 16th note pattern here into this. And they can't even mouth drum it. And it's like, okay, so I have some ideas for you. Let me try that. Let me try a few things that might fancy you, you know? Yeah. It is, and in the midst of me work, I do everything. You get your best take out of me in the studio, first take. Because I go in there prepared, mind frame set. You set me the tunes. I went and charted the stuff out, and I come out with my best diamonds on, okay? I come out with my Liberace's, okay? And I'm swinging for the fence, bro. And let me get through the first song until you criticize, or the first take, before you criticize it. Because that's going to be your first take. My first take's always the best one. 99.9% of the time. Because I come in prepared and I'm ready to go. It's like, you know, going into the game, you know, going to play football, man. I'm coming through the line, hand me the ball. I'm going to come down with my helmet down. I'm going to plow through and I'm going to get the first down, or I'm going to hopefully get a touchdown. So that is where, but in that process, I'm learning to like able to breathe and try to enjoy and make it an enjoyable experience for the songwriter, because he's paying me, you know, rather than be like, just hold on, I got the answer. No one wants to hear that shit, man. That's snide. That's condescending. And it's cocky. So I always say, just let me do my first thing and then you critique it. You may love it and you may not, but just let me come and pull aid through the wall. I'm coming through the wall, man. Let me do it. And then we can critique it and then we can go from there. So, but yeah, man, it's what you put out there, man. It's energy. Are you inspiring somebody? Are you part of the problem or part of the solution? And my brother would tell me that, you know, and I'd say that. And I'm like, well, it's true, man. You know, like, you know, are you part of the problem or the solution? I'm like, I want to be part of the solution and then the winning team. And I want to be inspired as someone's inspiring me, you know.
Let me ask another question about Kingdom Come. Is there anything they're asking of you? You know, like, hey, this is kind of what we like from a drummer. We know you can do this. We've been watching you. We've been, you know, kind of preparing you for this moment. Now this moment is here. In the studio, can we give you more of this? Or they're like cutting you loose, letting you be Matt Muckle?
They cut me loose. They give me a lot of leeway. We all write, me, Danny, and JB write a lot. We've been writing together. So there's a lot of trust. I have a lot of leeway. Now, on the old songs and the stuff we play live from the old albums, there's not much because the parts are appropriate. I'm here to do what James did, and I'm here to do a better job. I want to do a better job. My thing is always be better than the last person was in the band, okay? And how can I look better? How can I play better? How can I have a better attitude, you know? And so my hands are a little tied on some of the stuff on the old, but there's not, I would play that stuff anyway. On those parts are very appropriate. There's, but I pay homage and respect to the actual songs that were had. I mean, they've had four big hits. I mean, every time I turned on MTV as a kid in 1988 to 1990 or 91, they're on MTV every hour. That's, yeah. You know, and their poster was on my bedroom wall as a kid, you know? So there's things that are expected of me. I know it's expected of me. I'm supposed to play drums like John Bonham and Tommy Lee and Dave Grohl, you know, and that's what I just been, you know, and I'm happy with that.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, let me ask you, you're back in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And let me ask you about how Pittsburgh, growing up in Pittsburgh, shaped or influenced the way you play music.
Well, you know, my cousin Alan was probably the biggest influence. He played drums. He lived three doors up from me, and he still plays. And I just spoke to him this morning. He's a professional drummer, local guy, and that shaped me. They had a cover band, it was top 40 band, and I would sit on the floor next to the floor tom, or over top of him. There was a set of steps, and the drums were here. he was sitting rehearsing, and I'd be the steps sitting, you know, going over top of him and watched everything he did. And my older brother played. So I was around a lot of great drumming. And so how it shaped me is probably, you know, just, I felt it. It was like an egg. God gives you a gift, and it's all from God. And it was in me. I just wanted to do it. But I think that there are people like, you know, like my cousin was so, such a big influence on me, and a great role model, you know. And as far as what shaped me in my town, there wasn't, I mean, there was a scene around here, but I kind of got my first record deal when I was maybe 22 with Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And I did it. I mean, we did it on our own. We didn't have a lot of help from radio stations or local people. We started selling out Metropole, and no one knew how we did. We had all these all ages bands open up for us, and we opened for a lot of national acts, and the local promoter, Rich Angler, put us on a bunch of shows, and we just kept building our crowd. And that was more, that built me, informed me, learned me, and taught me how to be a businessman, and how to get a record deal and build numbers. And that band didn't do so well when we got signed. I jumped ship before the album got released. And then I joined a band called Cinematic that had this massive deal with Atlantic. And that's the thing that kind of catapulted me into, and that band was from a Youngstown, Ohio, which is only an hour away from Pittsburgh. That catapulted me into working with Buck Cherry, DJ Ashba, you know, Dizzy Reed from Guns N' Roses, right. Paul Gilbert, and, you know, George Lynch and stuff like that. And so, yeah, man, that getting the record deals and locally, that's kind of learning the business was, right. You know, formed me with, you know, drumming. I just listened to whatever I was into. Like, I was into Boss Skaggs and Paul Simon. And then, but I was also into like Iron Maiden and Kiss, Zeppelin and the Beatles, and, you know, and Van Halen, you know, so. You know, so yeah, man, I mean, I just made my own way. I just followed a path wherever it was going. I just, whatever I felt was cool, and I felt good drumming was on it and good songs.
Yeah. During that timeline, what led you to Los Angeles?
I think my second record deal, I was out there doing my album, Sound City. In 2000, and I just fell in love with Los Angeles. I wanted to be there all the time, and which put me on the road with like Alice Cooper and Aerosmith and, you know, AC/DC and Buck Cherry. I met guys from Buck Cherry, and then they brought me in to start doing recording for the third album, and that band kind of went defunct for a while. I joined DJ Ashba, which, you know, I was living out in LA at the time, and yeah, man, I fell in love with LA when I moved there, and I knew I was gonna love it before I was out there doing the albums, but that's what, you know, kept me working. I kept jumping from one thing to the next, one bigger band, and kept, like, you know, totem pulling up, you know, so to speak, higher and higher, you know, with that. As I kept going. So yeah, man, I miss LA. It's getting a little weird lately out there. Yeah. You know, a little strange, man. I'm good. And I like to go and visit, man, but, like, you know, it's not what it was. Very okay. Strange. But I'm spending some time down in Nashville. I'll be down there in May. So we're going to have to hook up.
Dude, that would be amazing. Yeah, we should grab Dutch and do something. Well, let me ask you, I know, what's your experience with Nashville? I know you have some experience.
Supposed to move down there. And summer of 2023, and I didn't. Some stuff came up, and I was like, I want to work on some stuff here right now, and then I was going to move down there, and I'm contemplating still. I have a lot of good things going on where I'm at right now, and I kind of picked up the pieces and put it back together here for a second, and things are going great. But if I really want to be a working musician and really work in the studio, I need to be down there. So I'm going back down to May, and I'm coming to check it out. And if I'm going to get one more, give it the college effort and try. And it's a little crazy down there, man. You know, I'm getting older, and I'm like, I don't need to be around the crazies. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to figure that spot, that healthy, you know, spot. So I have some friends that are like Fort Thurston, who's played Randy Houser and whatnot, and Chris Frazier from Foreigner. So consulting with them, and yeah, we're. I'm gonna make it back down, and you might see me down there for good. You don't know.
Well, keep in touch, man, because it would be great to connect with you in person. May's a little crazy. I got one kid coming home from college, and the other graduating from college in May.
Yeah.
Nashville's beautiful, and it has changed quite a bit. There's a lot of people moving here, so there is no really clear, defined scene. I think the people are making the scene what it is. So it's fascinating. Did you do some work with Gabby Barrett?
Yeah, I was her music director and drummer, and her dad was contacting me quite a bit, Los Angeles, when I was living out there. And I said, look, you know, he's like, I know you write for people and some kid artists, man. And Gabby was pretty young at the time, and I didn't know what to do. I was writing like power punk pop stuff, like, you know, Avril Lavigne-ish type of stuff meets Good Charlotte for these young, these Orange County kids and Hollywood kids that were trying to get deals and working with Disney. And so, you know, Gabby's dad was always super nice to me. And then I came back and I put a band together for her before she hit American Idol. And then I did some dates after she got off the show, and she got involved with the kid that was one of the fourth or fifth place dudes, whatever. And got, so my whole job description and drummer, music director, band hiring guy kind of got pushed on the wayside as she got engaged and married to another musician who's from Nashville. So, yeah, I was with her for a while. And also, I was with Christian Chenoweth as well. And she did a country album. So, yeah, that's my two big female rock stars, people I played with, you know.
Yeah. You talk about producing and teaching and working with young musicians. So I feel like mentorship is a big part of the style in which you teach and produce. There's a mentorship style. Can you speak to that? Kind of what maybe your philosophy is to work with these young people, to work with somebody who's maybe less experienced?
My opinion is I think what's important is you can give fish to somebody. You want to teach somebody how to fish. I let them watch me and do and absorb all that I do, so they learn how to walk away from this after me coaching a band for a year or two. You know, someone can run with it and they don't need me anymore. And it's good to see people flourish, you know, and take what you gave them, theoretically through music and through the business. They learn what you did. And they follow in your footsteps, and people are sponges. If they're interested, people are smart. They'll pick up and do what they want, and they'll pick up the good stuff. I'll say, leave my good and take my bad. I love seeing people, these young kids, go off and play, and put their albums out after. I'll produce their first album or whatever, or I'll show them how to structure a song. They have these ideas, and that's a 7-minute song. I'm like, okay. Let's take this part, cut it out, throw it away. Okay, these chord changes are great. We need 8 bars for the intro, 8 for verse, 4 pre-chorus, 8 chorus. Repeat, okay? Solo, chorus out, you know? You try to give them a template and show them grace and patience. Because people, you know, you don't know what kind of home life these kids have mostly. You know what I mean? Most of the kids' parents are divorced, you know, and you're dealing with that. So, you know, showing people love and compassion and grace and giving your knowledge to them from your heart, your passion to them, it goes a long way. And it's a never ending. It's like the dividends are just far beyond your belief. I mean,
right. Is there anything special you do to keep it fun, to keep them engaged?
I'm constantly kidding around. I'm goofy, man. You know, I mean, I pull tricks on them. I'm always like, you know, and the parents are there, so they laugh at all this stuff. I really encourage families together to stay in the room with us And I want them to see how I interact with kids. There's no misinterpretation, you know. It's very seldom anyone ever gets scolded. You know, this is where you're supposed to be fun. You know, you're supposed to have fun. You don't trample on a butterfly when someone's growing and they're flourishing. You know, you want to see them flourish and fly away. So, I don't know. I think, and you know what? It's more rewarding than being in a rock band, because these parents see that you're pouring into their kids, dude, and they're like, dude, this dude's awesome. And these kids come to you about stuff they can't go to other kids in school with, you know, whatever. There's a trust factor. It's just good. You want it to be a safe place for people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And make it fun. Life is moving way too fast. And the way it looks lately, I don't think things are going to become more fun. It looks like we're going down in a toilet. you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I listen to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend podcast.
Okay. And,
he's brought up a couple times. He's got a couple kids that are like late teens, early 20s now, a son and a daughter. And he always talks about how, you know, people are like, man, when I was a kid, I had it hard. You've got it easier, you know, in every generation, you've got the parent or the grandparent that said how hard they had it and how much easier they had it. But Conan says, and I believe this, and he goes, I feel like this generation has it harder than I had it. There's so much pressure with online stuff and the pressure to meet a certain standard that this generation of young people coming up have to deal with that you or I didn't have to deal with. We only had the people in our neighborhood or in our school that we had to contend with. And so now they have the world to deal with. And so to be a safe space for that young person where you fall in the cracks between their friend next door or at school, the parent, the teacher, you're like in that middle ground. You're like that adult that can show that you don't have to be serious all the time. Music is fun. Music is creative. We're learning. We're growing.
And I tell them, I said, listen, if this is not fun, get out of it. Because I say, like, I don't really have fun when I go in the studio. What's fun is being done with the work and hearing it after it's being mixed. Okay. Because I'm stressed and I have to make that dollar. I have to make that client happy. And it becomes fun if you end up becoming the drummer in that band and you go out and you play and you make money, because now you're on autopilot. You're playing and music together. It's magical. It's fun. If it's not fun, get out, you know. If it's stressful, you try to teach them how to get to the point to make it fun so it becomes second nature, and you're just playing, you're jamming, whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know everything around you just disappears, and you're in the moment, and music is magical, and you know, and it's all from God. If we remember that, it's all on borrowed. It's what we do with it, and that's just it, you know.
One of the things that we've talked about a lot recently on the podcast is there was a pre-internet time when we had records and cassette tapes, and you would try and learn parts just by ear. And sometimes you would get it wrong, but you would think that you were playing it right, but it became the way you interpreted this Zeppelin song, the way you interpreted this Rush song or you know, an Elvin Jones part, a fill, and that became your voice. You were inspired, and we pulled from these bands and drummers and musicians that inspired us, but we had to do it this way because we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have somebody showing us. We had some videos in the 90s and stuff like that, DCI, and we had books and other things like that. But still, there was this, we had to go through this filter of our own brain, our own ears, and somebody not showing it. So what happens is you have personalities. When you hear somebody on record or whatever, you're like, oh, I know who that is. You could tell. That's Matt Chamberlain, I could tell. That's Greg Morrow. I just know by that snare sound. Yeah. Now there's this kind of debate about, are we losing that personality?
You totally are. Because everything's sampled. Everything's fake. Okay. I tell people, look, I have a DW kit and the Yamaha recording custom kit. and a Ludwig kit. It sounds amazing. I hit the drums with feel and finesse and power. I'm pulling the best sound out of the drum. Why are we changing my drum sound? Because I want it to sound like Breaking Benjamin. I'm like, well, okay. I can't say much because the guy's mixing it. But there's a reason. If you want me to sound like Alex Van Halen, bro, I'll put tape on that snare drum head and put a black dot on there, and I'll rimshot that thing, and I'll play just like him. I know how to do that. You're losing that now. Everything is coming. You, whatever you were, if you bring that to the table, Alex Van Halen's snare drum sound with John Bonham's kick, okay? You know, and you got Dave Grohl's big crash and bash. And, you're gonna, and this is what you have. You place it together. Your right hand is from Dave Grohl, and your left hand is from Alex Van Halen, and your kick drum is like John Bonham. You lose it. Mm-hmm. His engineer is taking your stuff, squashing it, and replacing it. And all that hard work that you and I, our time frame, it becomes just like it's voided now. You know what I mean? It's watered down. I call it music from the waist up, rather music from the waist down, where you shake your moneymaker like Elvis did and was allowed to be showed on TV. I like the dirt and the grit. You know, I want to feel that.
Yeah.
And don't feel that. Somebody's recording sound great, but yeah, I mean, and we're losing that. Yes, we are losing that. we lost it. You know, that's why though, the new Kingdom Come stuff, I'm using old Ludwigs and the stuff. Room mics, and I'm using all Ludwig stuff, and I'm going for it, and we're making it real, you know, Marshalls, you know, and you know, making it sound like, because we can, it might not hold up with you know with the new you know Avenged Sevenfold album, but it's what we love and our fans will love, you know what I mean?
Right. I feel like there's less of a gatekeeper type situation with music that people can access when it was major record labels and you only heard and were able to buy things that the record label deemed appropriate. Now anybody can put out a record and find a way to distribute it. And so there's more opportunities. But at the same time, you have to, I've worked with bands here in Nashville and they're like, well, this is how we want to produce the record. This is the route we want to go because, you know, if it's a country band, like if once this single is on the radio and it's bookended by, you know, a Jason Aldean song and then this other, it's got to sound, just as good. There can't be a dip in that. And because that's the market they're competing with. Yeah. And so I get that. They're trying to get in the same space as maybe a top 10 artist. But if that's not your goal, then why replace every sound? Why not use the technology that's available, that has been available for over 100 years, okay, to put that mic in the right spot and to play the drum the way it should be played?
It's a lost art. So and let's just face it. Let's not lie to each other. We'd all like to have our songs back on the top 10 charts. Okay. You're full of shit. If you say you're not worried about that, not saying not worried, but you would all enjoy that. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I mean, let's not bull crap each other. But however, really, what's realistic? How about that? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, if I kind of think it sounds like, you know, like Children of Bodom or, you know, something heavy and, you know, Meshuggah, I don't know, man. I just, it's not believable. You know what I mean? I can play that stuff. I don't care to. But also, it comes out, I think you have to understand, you know, if finding your place and being happy with where you are. And being a true artist, kind of, you know, I can write any kind of song. I really can. And I have a passion for songwriting, but the person has to sell it, who I'm writing for and writing with, you know, who's going to sing. So, I don't know. I mean, I just, I think it's about being true to yourself, being realistic, and not being delusional. That's a problem today. Delusional people and entitled people. Mm-hmm. We won't get it. That's a whole other podcast. I'm running off. Reel me back in with my ADD. So I think musicians have that, and they are not just musicians, but people in general are entitled, and it's like a epidemic, you know, like across the border now, across the line. So, but I think that, you know, I think there's enough audience out there and enough outlets. If you do the best of what you can do at your genre, and it rises to the top, you will get notoriety and you will make money and you'll do well. You'll be successful, but you got to be the best. You got to be one of the best, you know. Find out what it is, you know, and that you love, and then be the best at it, and it'll rise, you know.
What do you think feeds into that delusion? Is it because when you and I grew up, it's like everything just seemed unreachable, you know? It was all on MTV and these big stadium tours, and it's like, wow, like that would be amazing.
Yeah, I thought things were tangible. I was a dreamer, you know. I had big dreams, and I thought, I can do this. I can get a record deal. I can do this. I can, you know, be with a band that can write great songs and eventually, you know, get a record deal. Yeah, I can do all this. I don't know. I don't know if I ever felt like things weren't tangible for me or reachable. Okay. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. Not to be snide, I always made do. I was like, I'm going to plow through and make this happen. So, but I do, I can relate to what you're saying, though. I can. Yeah. I just don't, you know what I mean? Like, I always thought, that's what I want to do, and I'm going to do it, you know?
What about people that you're mentoring that want to go from the club and the bars to the arena and the stadium gigs? Like, if they're like, I need to break away from this scene. I'm ready. I'm tired of doing this. I want to play in the sheds. I want to do this stuff. How can I be proactive? Is there something you can tell them?
It's funny. My buddy, Matt Starr, who plays for Ace Frehley and among other. Yeah, Matt's a great dude, man. Good friend. One of the best rock singers in the business. He's amazing. Not in a great genre, but a great rock singer. But he's a coach, and he has said the next level is to find somebody who's at the next level. Okay. So you can talk to them, ask them questions, or maybe you make it hired by them. So you can go and find the person to the next level who's where you're not at. It doesn't seem achievable. You're here. You need to be here. This is now an indie band. Now you're playing in your basement. Oh, I know. Now I'm in the band. I'm going to ask more questions. And you start opening up for somebody bigger. You become friends with them. If you're great, if you're a reliable individual and you show signs of, you know, being reliable and being talented and not being a jerk, hopefully someone lends you a helping hand and pulls you to the next level. So yeah. It's always about attitude and being gracious and wanting to learn and striving to the next level. You have to know somebody to get to the next level. How are you going to get there? If you don't know anyone, you're going to stay in the same spot, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, there's been several stories on this podcast of people just being at a show and wanting to speak with somebody in the band after the show, but like, oh, they don't want to talk to me. But
talk to them. No, go yeah. and say, go kindly and say, I just want to ask you a few questions. What are they going to say? No to you? If they say no to you, then they're jerks. Write them off, you know? Then you learn, you're never going to get anywhere if you don't ask questions. Or, you know, it's like, ask, be specific in what you want. You know, and what you want to ask and what you want to have and get the answer. And someone will eventually is good enough and kind enough, will they'll help you out. And not everyone's so bad, you know.
I've passed this on to my 18-year-old son who's studying music up in Rochester, New York. And, you know, I was like, one thing I've learned through the podcast is people like to talk about their experiences. They like to share their experience with you. So as you're learning and growing and your community is growing, don't feel like people are unapproachable. They are approachable and they love to talk about their experiences and share. And you create a bond with the people, with the right people that want to do that. And this is, I feel like this is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. People, I think there are good people that want to help. And they want to see people flourish. Like I know the guys in my band are all very kind and loving, and they have no problem talking to you about stuff. They might be a little shy. I'm pretty extroverted, so I'm the loud one, you know. But I don't like people feeling uncomfortable. I don't like that, you know. I don't make people feel reduced. And if you have questions, I will take the time and answer questions for you.
We've talked about mental health. How about physical health? I'm a little bit older than you, but how are you dealing with, are you dealing with anything physically that you have to address?
I'm so blessed. Like, maybe I get a little tired throughout, like, you know, 7 o'clock the other day. I'm not dealing with anything. Thank God. I'm very blessed. I don't know what, I'll be 50 in 2 weeks. So I don't know what 50 feels like. I don't feel 50. I don't think I look it. I don't know. Maybe to a certain degree. I have hair on my head and and I hit the drums like an animal still. I said, if I hit the drums, God, I love Kiss, but if I hit it like Peter Criss does, I'll just stop. You know? I love the Tommy Lee goes out and hits the drums like an animal when yeah. Taylor Hall did. Yeah, but physical health, thank God. And you just got to, you got to stay pretty healthy. And if you want to play hard and play strong, yeah, you got to eat right and get some sleep.
What about diet, drinking, anything like that?
I haven't, drinking doesn't do much for me. I think me and Danny shared a beer after the first night on the last three shows we did. Doesn't really do much for me. Yeah.
That's good. That's probably what has saved you for sure.
Oh, believe me. I definitely tied a million on like an, but thankfully that stopped. So everything's, it doesn't do much for me anymore. So I want to live life, man, and have fun and laugh and surround myself around good people and inspire people. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. Well, before your phone dies, what's going on with Kingdom Come? Is there a tour? Is there a website? How do people know?
Yeah, it's kingdomcomerockband.com. Okay. Go to our website. That's our website. Go to our Instagram and Facebook page. It's under construction. It's up. We're posting videos right now from the last few shows. And we're in the studio cutting new tracks. We're releasing some singles in the next few months. And we are going to be out. We have some dates booked as of yesterday down in Dallas, I think. Two days in Texas, they want in Mississippi the first week of June. I'll keep everyone posted about that. We are being booked, and we're going to Europe in fall, and in Japan after that. So we're gonna post all this stuff. I don't have all the details. We are super excited. We're back, and we're here to come back and put a scar on everyone's face.
Yeah. Well, we'll text. I'll be in touch with you. We'll tie this whole thing up. And figure out how to present this episode. But Matt, it's been awesome to meet you. I want to have a proper goodbye before your phone dies. But let's connect if possible when you're in town.
I would love that. Hey, thank you for having me on. I'm beyond elated and just grateful and thankful for that you took the time to ask me to be on your show.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Well, let's keep in touch and keep this going.
God bless you.
All right. Have a good rest of your day.
Bye. See you again.
Bye. So there you have it. My conversation with Matt Muckle. That was super fun and fun to make that connection with my longtime friend Dutch and this amazing drummer, Matt. And I'm hoping to get a chance to meet him in person and hang with Matt. If you're a fan of Kingdom Come, check them out if they are in your town. Stay tuned next week for Zach Albetta's interview with Tom Jorgensen. He is a New York City-based drummer and a disciple of the master teacher Michael Carvin. Tom is currently on tour with the Beetlejuice musical. So I hope you check that out. But for now, everyone, thanks so much for listening and hope to see you around. Bye-bye.